And we have Mr. Carrico and Ms. Adelfio. Good morning. Mr. Carrico, would you like to reserve time for rebuttal, sir?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 5 minutes.
5 minutes, sure. Okay. And whenever you'd like to begin, sir.
May it please the Court, I'm Brian Carrico with the Public Defender's Office on behalf of Juan Candelaria. Your Honor, this case involves two pieces of hearsay evidence which were improperly admitted, and the error in admitting those statements was not harmless error. The two statements admitted, one was a prior consistent statement prepared by the Commonwealth's only eyewitness to the event, written out as part of the fire marshal's investigation that was admitted as evidence. The second was statements from the co-defendant who was not called to testify at this trial that were admitted, again, over defense objection as part of the Commonwealth's case. Right, these two pieces of evidence were clearly out-of-court statements introduced for the facts of the matter asserted, and they do not fall within any of the hearsay exceptions recognized in Virginia. As to whether they are harmless, Your Honor, these pieces of evidence were extremely harmful. The reason being, this case largely hinged on the credibility of the witnesses. The Commonwealth put their witnesses on, effectively putting forward their theory of the case. The Commonwealth, Mr. Candelaria, the defense, put on his evidence, including his own testimony, his own denials under oath in front of the jury, as well as an unbiased witness who testified to hearing two of the Commonwealth's witnesses discussing setting up Candelaria. Now, certainly I would not suggest that there was not sufficient evidence. As if we were here on a sufficiency argument, we would lose. The Commonwealth's theory of the case certainly presented enough evidence for the jury to find Mr. Candelaria guilty. However, there was also certainly sufficient evidence for the jury to come back not guilty, to find more than a reasonable doubt. The case came down to which witnesses the jury believed, whether they believed the Commonwealth's witnesses or the defense witnesses. And in a case like that, it makes a huge difference that the jury went back with one written statement, what they referred to in a question as written testimony.
Counsel, excuse me, may I interrupt you? But didn't Benson testify to almost exactly the same thing that was in the statement? So wouldn't that be cumulative?
To an extent it was. However, Benson's testimony on the stand, he stumbled many times over his testimony. He stated it twice when asked where they went after burning the vehicle. Both times he stated, "We went directly back to the barracks. No wait. We went to the Korean church and returned the key to the co-defendant." There were a number of internal inconsistencies like that within Benson's testimony that, when presented as a written statement prepared months in advance as part of the fire marshal's investigation, that statement was provided in a setting where he was not subject to cross-examination. He had time to sit back and think about precisely what words he wanted to put to writing. And to put a piece of evidence like that into the jury's hands as they go back into the jury room, while they're sitting there with each of their own recollections of what each of the witnesses testified to, which is what they're supposed to rely on in weighing the credibility of the witnesses. And then they also have this one written, again, what they refer to as written testimony from one of the Commonwealth's witnesses, I think it defies reason to say that having that written statement would have no effect on the credibility determination. Additionally, the statements from the co-defendant, who again was not called to testify, never actually exercised a Fifth Amendment right, was not demonstrated to be unavailable. And these statements were made after the conspiracy and, in fact, revealed the conspiracy. Those statements were the only statements that involved any benefit to Mr. Candelaria. Certainly, a benefit is not a requirement of any crime. Motive is not a requirement of any crime, but it's still a part of what a jury expects to hear. It's still a part of the Commonwealth's case in nearly every case. What motive, what reason did this person have to give? And the only evidence that they had of a motive was the improperly admitted statements from the co-defendant. And either of these statements on their own, either of these improperly admitted statements should be enough for this court to reverse and remand this case. However, even if the court does find that either of these individually is not, having both pieces of improperly admitted evidence, again, both tipping the scale of credibility in the same direction, certainly at a cumulative stage cannot be seen to be harmless.
It would be non-constitutional harmless error, the test that we would have to use, right?
Correct. It would be non-constitutional harmless error. However, this court still must find that without usurping the role of the jury, that had this evidence not been admitted, the jury would have reached the same verdict. Again, this is not the standard is not sufficiency. It should not be sufficiency. It should be a higher standard. Because when there's improperly admitted evidence, it's difficult to remove that, to consider how the jury would have viewed the properly admitted evidence without, again, the improper hearsay tipping that scale of credibility. I would refer to the court to the Skaggs case, which I cite in my brief, as to what I think is the proper standard for this sort of error. In Skaggs, there was a co-defendant statement that was improperly admitted. That case was reversed on harmless error. And what this court said in that case was that our review of the whole record convinces us that it is clear beyond a reasonable doubt that without the evidence of the co-defendant's statements, the jury would have returned a verdict of guilty. So I asked the court to do the same thing that it did in Skaggs, review the whole record. There's evidence both ways. I don't believe there's enough to say that it is clear beyond a reasonable doubt that without this improperly admitted evidence, the verdict would have been the same. For that reason, I ask this court to reverse the ruling of the Stafford Circuit Court, remand this case for a new trial, and I would like to reserve the remainder of my time
sure.
for response. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning. Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. Preliminarily, the admission of Mr. Benson's statements was harmless error, and as Judge Beals pointed out, the test is whether or not it was a non-constitutional error and whether or not the defendant received a fair trial. In this case, as Judge Chafin pointed out, Benson testified exactly to what he swore to or what he wrote in his written statement. The defendant in this case had the opportunity to cross-examine the defendant, both regarding his prior statement and regarding his testimony on the stand.
Excuse me, Ms. Adelfio, does the Commonwealth concede that it was error to introduce a prior consistent statement?
I think that it's correct that there was not yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
There was not a prior inconsistent statement.
Right, it was a prior consistent statement.
That's correct, Your Honor. And Benson's statements were corroborated at length by Savitas, Bonhomme, Ennis, and Arnold. And given that and the totality of the evidence in this case, there was no harmless error in admitting this prior consistent statement. And I just want to return to the fact that Candelaria by counsel had ample opportunity to cross-examine this defendant with respect to both of those statements. With respect to the admission of the hearsay statements of the co-defendant Vaught, I again, as argued on brief, suggest that any challenge to the court's determination that the statements were admitted as an admission against penal interest were waived by Rule 5A:18. Excuse me, the defendant could have
interjected and told the court that he wished to respond to the Commonwealth's argument that it was a statement against penal interest. He did not do so. Nonetheless, even if the assignment of error was not waived, any error, as argued with respect to the first assignment of error, was harmless. Again, there was overwhelming evidence proving that Candelaria conspired with Vaught and Benson to burn Vaught's car for money. And I'm happy to go through it. Benson testified himself that he dropped off Candelaria. He saw the car go up in flames. Candelaria returned to the car. Arnold testified that the car could not have been hot-wired, and Vaught admitted that he was the person who had the only key.
Your Honor, that was my phone.
That's all
right. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Well, we're happy to ignore it if you can.
Oh, okay. I am mortified, Your Honor. I really apologize.
That's all right.
I'm sorry.
This happened to all of us.
Not to me. I am so sorry.
That's all right. If it's easier for you to go turn it off,
no,
you can do that.
No, may I? I'm
sure,
just,
sure.
My mortification fault.
There you go. That's all right.
I will send a letter to the court. I'm so
Please,
sorry.
Don't worry. Go ahead.
Humiliated. I don't even know where to go from here. Again, Your Honor, any error in the omission of these statements was harmless given the overwhelming evidence presented in the trial court. Unless the court has any other questions, I'd ask that you affirm the decision of the trial court.
Thank you, Ms. Duffy.
Again, I apologize.
Mr. Carrico, you have some rebuttal time, sir.
Good morning. I'd like to initially respond to the Commonwealth's contention that the issue as to the co-defendant's statement being against penal interest was preserved. Whereas I believe that was preserved, the objection there is hearsay. Once a hearsay objection is made, the burden then is on the proponent of the evidence to demonstrate that it falls within an exception. The Commonwealth did not meet that burden. They merely stated statement against penal interest. They did not make any arguments as to why the statement does fall within that exception. It does not fall within that exception because the Commonwealth did not demonstrate the unavailability of the witness. Again, Mr. Vaught, as I discussed in the brief, was present in the courtroom. He was never called as a witness. The Commonwealth merely put forward that because he had a pending charge in the matter, certainly he would exercise the Fifth Amendment. However, he was not called. We do not know that. Additionally, the Commonwealth discusses the testimony as corroborated by Mr. Arnold at trial. I would just point out that Mr. Arnold said absolutely nothing about Candelaria. I believe Mr. Arnold was the... I apologize, I forget precisely his role, but he was a part of the investigation into the vehicle and discussed the vehicle. I believe he was the forensic scientist who discussed some of the burn patterns, but he did not make any testimony as to who burned the car, simply that it was burned and how it was burned. So I don't believe that corroborates any of the testimony as to Mr. Candelaria's involvement. There were only three witnesses that testified as to Mr. Candelaria's involvement. There was Mr. Bonome, who testified, again, over defense objection as to the co-defendant's statements. There was Mr. Savitas, who testified to a conversation he had with Mr. Candelaria, which, interestingly, in the supposed confession Mr. Candelaria made, to Mr. Savitas, he did not mention the pecuniary gain that was brought up by Mr. Bonamy. Additionally, the third was Mr. Benson, who was the only eyewitness to the case, and his eyewitness testimony was improperly buttressed by his prior consistent statement, which, again, the Commonwealth does correctly point out that defense did have the opportunity to cross-examine him on the stand, but we did not have an opportunity to cross-examine him when he was preparing that statement. So to allow the jury to go back with that statement, review that statement that was prepared without the rigors of cross-examination, They did come and ask, the jury did come after deliberation and ask for a transcript of Benson's testimony in court. They asked for written testimony from the other witnesses. Certainly this court has held that the questions from the jury have limited scope and how much this court can read into them. However, in reviewing these for harmless error, the court must find that without the improperly admitted evidence, the jury would have reached the same verdict. Not that the jury could have reached the same verdict, but that the jury would have reached the same verdict. And because this court cannot, in reviewing that the record in this case, decide that the jury would have reached the same verdict, I ask the court to reverse the decision of the circuit court and remand it for a new trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise.